People First Radio is a program about people, the society in which we live, and issues related to health and wellness.
Welcome to People First Radio. I'm Joe Pugh. Writer Jordan Kochuk is sharing his story and hoping to let the community know that alcoholism doesn't discriminate. Kochuk is one of four panelists at an upcoming event in Nanaimo called Rethinking Drinking, which is meant to explore alcohol use, its impacts on the community, and pathways to support and treatment. According to a BC government webpage, the harms and costs associated with alcohol use are greater than those for all illegal substances combined. I met up with Kochuk at Nanaimo's Harborfront Library to learn more about his experiences with alcohol and the process of getting help.
My name is Jordan Kochuk. I live in Duncan, and I'm a writer, formerly a television producer. And I'm thrilled to be involved with the Nanaimo Foundation this year on helping educate people on rethinking drinking.
Yes, Rethinking Drinking, a free community screening of a documentary and then a panel discussion. You are one of the panelists exploring alcohol use, its impact on our communities, and pathways to support and treatment. What are you hoping to communicate with the community at this event?
Good question. I love that I get to be a lived experience speaker for an event like this. And my lived experience is that I've been to treatment many times, and I wrestle with alcohol use disorder. That's a nicer, more medical way to say I'm an alcoholic, which feels even weird to say outside of 12-step meetings. But I hope that the community can see that alcohol use disorder is a disease. It's not a matter of being a lush. It's not weak morals on my part or that I'm greedy or dumb. It's a mental health disease of the mind, body, and spirit. And I love that I'm going to be on the panel with doctors to explain the more medical side of it. And what I hope to project is that alcoholism and alcohol use disorder does not discriminate. It can affect anybody. It doesn't run much in my family, except a couple of uncles I'm learning about. But I guess I was wired that way, and the career paths I took in music and television, where there was a lot of booze, I think it was the perfect storm. And I've wrestled with it for about 3 decades now. I'm 54, and still, day by day, it's like walking with a rock in your shoe. You can't take it out, but you just learn to walk with it.
And building on some of what you just said there, how would you define or describe alcohol use disorder to someone who isn't super familiar with it?
Yeah, alcohol use disorder, and again, the doctors will be able to talk more on this, is a disease of the mind and the body and the spirit. And so it's actually a biosocial, spiritual disease. So And I don't say disease lightly, but it is classified as a disease. So it affects my spirit, it affects my thinking, the way I'm wired, it affects my body and health, and it affects my social standing, burning bridges or being unemployable for a little bit while I'm sick. And I want people to know that, it's different for everybody, but I don't wake up in the morning. Let me put it this way. I don't wake up in the morning thinking, today I'm going to drink and burn my life down. I've come from a great family and I have a good education, and I had and still have a great career in television. I got to travel the world, and, it affected me. It brought me down. It made me lose a lot of things, and I'm lucky to be learning from it. I mean, I wouldn't want to wish this journey on anybody, but I'm glad I have it because now I can speak about it. I've been to treatment 6 or 7 times and a bunch of sober houses because, unfortunately, relapse is a part of my story. There are people that go to one meeting or just decide one day that that's it, and I wish I was one of them. That's not part of my story. And it's funny that like Dr. Aylon and Dr. Walmsley, who I'll be on the panel with, do say that relapse is part of addiction. It doesn't have to be, but it's okay. And I remember not that too long ago, being in the hospital, and Dr. Walmsley, who I usually speak with, saw me in the hospital bed and told me, "It's okay. It's okay. It's going to happen. We got you." It's tough. It affects my thinking. It affects my, I'm powerless over that first sip. And if my brain tells me I don't have a disease or that it's okay, one beer can lead me to 2 weeks of just going downhill. And it's awful. I never want to go back again.
You mentioned there seeing a doctor in the hospital and them telling you it's okay. Accompanying this panel discussion, there's going to be a screening of a documentary. That documentary is called Smashed, Breaking the Cycle of Alcohol Use Disorder. It's a half-hour story about the late Dr. Jeff Harries from Penticton and his work in sort of, maybe I'll say, changing the approach to treating alcohol use disorder. One of the big takeaways I had from that story was it seemed like one of the significant things he was doing was just like reducing the amount of judgment from healthcare providers treating this issue. And I'm wondering if you can speak to that idea.
Yeah. Well, I mean, first of all, I'm glad to live in this era where there is more compassion, more research, and more medical-based things around addiction and especially for me, alcoholism, alcohol use disorder. So it's nice that we live in a compassionate time, somewhat, and that I'm not in the 30s or 40s where they would put people in asylums who couldn't control their mind and their body like alcoholics can have. So I love that that there's medication there, and there's always research on more medication. I'm on medication. That's one thing in my tool belt. Reading, meditation, exercise, nutrition, all those physical things are part of my tool belt. Spiritually, I have to keep my sobriety and recovery, I have a strong spiritual connection, because when you're going downhill with alcohol, you lose that. It's you're just empty, a shell of a person. In my tool belt are 12-step meetings, meditation, reading and writing really helps me, and medication. So it's like a menu. I just take what works for me. It's taken a long time to find the perfect recipe, and I still haven't found it. But, man, I got to tell you, every relapse is worse, and yet every relapse I learn much more about myself.
Could you give me a sense of what it is like entering a treatment program for alcohol use disorder?
You usually come into a treatment center. Well, I'll talk about myself, of course. I usually enter a treatment center broken. With alcohol, the cycle goes that I have a relapse and that I put my name on the list for detox. There's only 12 beds in Nanaimo, and it can be 4 to 6 weeks wait, and you have to call every morning to see if you get in. And it's funny because you're encouraged to keep drinking a little bit. So you're sitting at home or in a motel waiting for your call for detox, sipping alcohol. It's a terrible liminal place to be. And then I go to detox, and they help me medically because alcohol is one of the drugs that you can die from withdrawal, from seizures. So they medically detox you, and from there, there's some streamlines into treatment. So when I enter a treatment center, I'm already a little bit detoxed, and I'm broken. I've obviously done things to myself and ruined my sobriety and just feel terrible. So there's an amount of shame coming in. But if a good treatment center, they'll say, well, welcome home. You're in the right place. And it's great when there's a brotherhood or a communion of people. It's a good, safe place to get better. Find yourself again. Learn right living. You're learning to live again. It's really difficult to explain because I'm of this age and I have a wife and a great place to live and everything. But when I go downhill, I need help. And it's funny, being in treatment a few times, I didn't think I'd be back this time. But I just think it's going to be my last.
What kind of, so you talked about the experience of going to detox first, then going to a treatment center afterwards. What kind of things do you have to do? I'll say hoops do you have to jump through to make each of those things happen?
The social services and the people to help, especially here in Nanaimo, is extraordinary. So there's people in the Outreach Fan and Dr. Wamsley, and there are people you can go to that can help you get treatment, that can, or even help you put on a list, or help you find a place before treatment. Like before I went to this treatment center that I'm in, I was in a sober house called Safe Harbor. It's a wonderful place, wonderful staff. I guess the old-fashioned term would be a halfway house, but if you use the resources, they are there, but there's not enough. Like 12 beds detox in Nanaimo. There's only a few treatment centers, and they have a long waiting list. So the help is out there, but it's a tough go to jump through the hoops, find the right people, make the right phone calls, be well enough to see it through. Some people who are signed up for a treatment center don't show up because they're still sick, or decide not to because of fear. So yeah, it's not like the movies where you just decide you have a problem and you drive up to the front door with a friend and bring your suitcase. It doesn't happen that way. It is a long process.
You're listening to People First Radio. My guest is Jordan Kotchuk. He's a writer who lives in Duncan. He's also a panelist at Rethinking Drinking, a community event on March 25th hosted at Vancouver Island University by the Nanaimo Foundation. Kotchuk is speaking with me today about his experiences with alcohol use. I asked him what helps him take the step of entering treatment or detox following a relapse.
Oh, yes. Well, there's definitely support from the communities and my 12-step community. And it is the it's social workers, the people on the front lines, out in the outreach van or in the hospital. They actually have good people that can say, hey, you do want to go to treatment? Have you considered this? And they can make calls for you so you're not on your cell in the hospital or in the emergency waiting room. So there are people. And you can also call treatment centers direct and get your name on a list, I believe. But you do need that middle person, I should say, that knows all the ins and outs, that know what's available or what a good fit might be for you. They really, really help out. And also with compassion. They're like, okay, you did a bad thing, you made a bad choice, but you're not a bad person. Let's get you feeling well again.
What is the compassion like out there in the healthcare system around alcohol use disorder that you've experienced?
Here in Nanaimo, it's phenomenal with, you know, people like Dr. Wamsley. And I think because Nanaimo deals with a lot of addiction, I think every city does, but there is compassion here within the hospitals. The stigma outside of hospitals will never get better. It's awful. But I have been, my first line of defense when I'm at the end of my rope, I may be not allowed home because I'm going through a relapse. I shouldn't say not allowed home, but it's just, I know that I need help. I've gone to hospitals in Vancouver where I've actually overheard nurses say, or even to my face, like, well, let's not waste a hospital bed. Oh, it's an alcohol. It's a guy that's drunk. Let's get a real patient in here. You're taking up beds. Like, I have heard that many times. So when I go to an emergency room, I do need help like anybody that's sick. And to have compassion to say, okay, let's get you a bed. Let's get you something for withdrawal. And then have a compassionate doctor or a social person come by and say, hey, it's okay. Tell me about this. Like, it makes the world a difference. You don't, because it's a shameful thing, you know, even to say that I'm an alcoholic. It's hard. That's another guy, not the guy that's talking right now. So when people acknowledge that you are a good person and you're going through a hard time, that's so important to self-esteem, to recovery, everything.
According to a BC government webpage, alcohol use disorder is the most common substance use disorder in the province, but often goes unrecognized and untreated. I'm wondering if you could tell me a little bit about either the stigma or just the situation in general regarding alcohol versus other substances when it comes to use, availability, addiction, that whole galaxy.
Yeah, I think when a person's addicted to something, they can always find it, be it drugs, gambling, shopping, you know. But I got to say, alcohol is everywhere. And personally, I don't watch an episode of Mad Men or watch a movie with booze in it and think, man, I'm just craving a drink. I don't think that way, but it is just on the forefront. You walk down any street with a pub or a restaurant and there's a sandwich board on the sidewalk saying it's wine o'clock. Well, you don't see ones that say it's crack o'clock. So alcohol, because it's so readily available and so socially acceptable, it's, if somebody's really suffering from that, like other addictions, it's like, well, why can't you just stop? Well, why aren't you drinking? Just have a beer. It's a barbecue. Like it is tough. And I got to say, it does go unnoticed, too, because I feel like sometimes when I go to treatment, I'm a bit of a rare breed, and I've been called a dying breed, and because I'm just an old-school alcoholic. You know, in treatment, there's a lot of guys that did alcohol and cocaine and meth and fentanyl and this and that. I'm just an old-school alcoholic, and I've a couple of times, you know, I've had younger guys in treatment go, dude, you're so old. That's so weird. You know, so, and I know the new generations of younger people think drinking's uncool, and thank God, just like smoking on an airplane is now laughable. I think they look at highballs and drinking as no good. So that's a step in the right direction. But man, I got to tell you, it's everywhere. And it has taken me down, you know, like being on a patio saying, oh, I'm not drinking, I'm in recovery, and a seed is planted. Like, oh, I can do this, you know, and maybe it's waiting for you a week later, 2 weeks later, and then you have a drink. It's a sneaky disease.
What do you find the community aspect is like in treatment centers or in support groups, post-treatment centers?
Well, the post-treatment centers, there's always alumni. Alumni groups you can go to, and a lot of 12-step groups and non-12-step groups that are different than AA, like SMART meetings, Dharma meetings. So there's a lot out there, and there's a big opinion out there that treatment isn't necessary. Yeah, it gets you on your feet again, but basically when you leave treatment, you come up with some phone numbers and an AA pamphlet. So people are like, it kind of breaks my heart when moms and dads remortgage their house to send their son or daughter to treatment for 30 days thinking it's a cure, and it's not. Absolutely not a cure. But it does help me get on my feet and find myself again. But when I'm out of treatment, it's scary because nothing has changed, but I've changed. So I go back to the same neighborhood. I go back to the same places, go back to the same peers in my job. And I have to work hard to keep my change and not fall back into the things that haven't changed, if that makes any sense. But there are good support groups. Like I am a proud member of AA. And again, I really started making headway in both my writing and my recovery when I had the two sides of myself shake hands. And now I write about recovery, or some really dark stories about relapsing and some humorous stories about the characters in treatment. And that really helps me, you know.
Yeah, so you have shared your experiences in treatment. You shared them in a first-person piece last year for the CBC. You've got a Substack where you often touch on some of these issues. What has that been like, sharing that experience? What kind of reaction have you gotten from people based on some of your writing, and what has that created and put out into the world?
Yeah, I outed myself 2024 in the Globe and Mail when I wrote a piece about Dry January, how it's great for everyone, but I have the next 334 days to go. And it wasn't a pity piece. It was just my view as a sufferer of alcohol use disorder, how Dry January is framed and what being an alcoholic is like. That the difference between dry and sober is huge. Being dry is just not picking up a drink and still being miserable or not making changes in your behavior or your social world. Being sober, you change everything. So I outed myself in that piece, not knowing how people would react, because it's a well-covered topic. So many movies and books on recovery, and I just thought, what can I add to the conversation? And when that piece came out, I got so much response from strangers around Canada and beyond, how they've never heard their story told like that. Or I got some beautiful correspondence from people saying, I think I understand a little bit better what my daughter's going through, that she's not just being an unreliable teenager. And that made me feel really empowered. Not that I feel like I'm a spokesman or anything, but it made me write more that, oh, I can do this. I can add something to the conversation. And I'm really, I'm an open book. I speak... I'm very vulnerable when I speak about it. I don't hide anything. And if that helps smash more of the stigma or changes some people's minds or some family members about their loved ones who may be suffering, or even just the general population, that's, you know, then I just that just makes me feel good, you know. Because like I say, it doesn't discriminate. I'll go into a treatment center and be wearing a collared shirt and toting around a couple of notebooks, and people, the guys think I'm staff for the first week. So everybody's different in treatment. You know, like right now, my roommate is a guy straight out of prison, and he's my best friend right now because we're suffering from the same thing and we support one another. And, you know, telling your story is great for recovery when you're in a group of like-minded people. Me telling my story to you in things that are published and things that are seen by people who, normies, people who don't share this disease, is tough. I'm getting better at it. I'm getting better at being vulnerable because what do I have to lose, you know? Lots of people hide it. I hid it for years, even from my own two daughters who are maybe too young to know that maybe daddy doesn't have a migraine. Maybe there's something bigger going on this week when he's not feeling well. Or, you know, it's being vulnerable and talking about it helps me. I know a lot of people wouldn't want to do that. I've gotten some correspondence, emails, and calls for people to track me down saying, well, what authority do you have to talk about sobriety and alcoholism if you're still going to treatment? And, well, I'm not an authority on sobriety, but I'm an authority on my story. And if I can tell my story, if it helps somebody, great.
What are the things that you're hoping when you're sharing your story that you use the phrase normies there? What are you hoping that people who don't have firsthand experience or like a close connection in their family on this topic, what are you hoping to communicate with them? What are you hoping they take away from you sharing your story?
Yeah, I mean, it's too much to even think about or explain what goes on in my mind when I'm heading towards sickness. But my dad used to say, before we really started talking about it and learning about it together, he used to say, well, anytime you just feel like a beer, just grab a fancy latte at Starbucks. Dad, it doesn't work that way with addiction. So what I want people to know is that it's not a matter of weakness. Or like I said at the beginning, I'm not a lush. I'm not a weak. I know about my disease. I'm smart. I'm a good father. I'm a good person. But the alcohol use disorder can take you down on every level, spiritual, physical, social, and biological. So I want people to know that alcohol addiction is the same as any addiction, and it is a complex addiction. It's a complex disease, and I want people to know that their loved ones, you know, maybe like me, make bad choices, that know that their recovery is slipping, but they're not bad people. You know, it's a tough disease to navigate. So I want people to not really come forward with all this undeserved compassion, but a little understanding that I'm not partying when alcohol takes me down. I haven't liked the taste of alcohol in years and years and years. It stopped being fun in my 20s. I'm in my 50s now. But it's a thing that I grapple with. It's really hard to explain. Even just saying that now, it's like, well, that doesn't make sense. If you don't like it, if you know it ruins your life, why do you let yourself struggle with it? And there's a common saying in some groups that it's a disease where my mind tells me I don't have a disease.
Well, when the government of BC says alcohol use disorder is the most common substance use disorder in the province, do you think that there is a widespread awareness or recognition of that fact?
No. I think that would come to a lot of people as a surprise, actually, because alcoholics can sneak it in acceptable social circles or at home. It's not as... the optics aren't as obvious as, say, somebody bobbing and weaving in traffic. Like, oh, that person is sick. That person is an addict. There's alcoholics that are in denial. There's alcoholics that think they're functioning alcoholics. I'd never like that term. And then, you know, because we don't see people around in the streets, or it's not in our face, or if you're at a concert or something and there's drunk people, you're like, ah, it's a good party. There's so many levels to get to, like, oh man, that guy's kind of getting sick. His life is changing, you know? It's tough. I hope that answered your question.
This is People First Radio. Jordan Kotchuk is a writer who lives in Duncan. He's speaking with me about his experiences with alcohol use disorder. Kotchuk is a panelist at an upcoming event in Nanaimo called Rethinking Drinking. It's meant to explore alcohol use, its impact in the community, and pathways to support and treatment. Joining Kotchuk on the panel are addictions medicine specialists Dr. Roger Walmsley and Dr. Evan Allian, as well as Lorelei James. You're going to be participating in this panel discussion at VIU later this month. Who are you hoping turns out and takes part in that event?
Well, I'm hoping that people who aren't just in Island Health or in AA, people that know the score, I hope I'm not just talking to the converted. I hope people come out with a genuine curiosity about what can be done. What do we need more of? Who is getting sick? And, you know, just like you said, that stat about alcohol use disorder, just to even know that so many people have alcohol use disorder, don't know where to go, don't think they have a problem, or don't know how to navigate it. So I would like to reach people that, you know, just hear some facts. And I know the doctors especially will have this mind, I've heard them talk before, these mind-blowing statistics and facts about alcohol use disorder that even I opened up my eyes to my own recovery. So I'm hoping that people that know the disease and people that don't get a lot out of it. And my job, or I'm on the panel to talk about lived experience. Like, here I am.
And when you talk about what could be done on this issue, do you have any ideas on things we could do more of or do differently, or things that have helped you that you think could help other people?
Yeah, that's a whole can of worms because, you know, do we build 1,000 bed treatment center? Well, that won't really stop alcohol use disorder. I mean, like anything, it starts with education, like the Nanaimo Foundation is doing, talking to younger people about rethinking drinking. I'm not going to tell anybody don't drink. I tell my daughters, my daughter just graduated high school, I'm not telling you how to drink, but if you feel like something is wrong with it, come talk to me. So it's rethinking drinking, not go get sober. And I think that's an important message. Nobody was there to tell me in university that, hey, you may want to examine this, or here's some data. The general rule is, hey, you're kind of falling off the tracks. Here's a pamphlet for AA. Well, that's not very helpful until you get in, really get into your education about it. So it's education, and again, we need more beds. We need more treatment centers and just sober houses and detox beds. Yeah, I mean, it would be great if I didn't have to wait 4 weeks sipping on a bottle of vodka waiting to get into detox. Like, that would be great, but is that going to change things? I don't know. I really don't know. Education has to be the number one thing.
Is there anything you can tell me about how someone navigates the process of seeking detox or seeking treatment from a public versus private perspective of how much someone has to pay to access some of those kind of services, or what the public healthcare system can give you?
Yeah, it's important to remember that treatment centers are businesses. Even the publicly funded ones that are a little more rough around the edges, that's still a business. That's still a guy using a center or his home divided into beds to get money to run it, and usually a profit. And there's some really bad ones and podcasts out there where people do go overboard on the profit thing and really cut corners, and it's just a money-making thing. But it's important to know that even your high-end treatment centers like Edgewood here in Nanaimo, which is Fountains and Five Star Meals, which I've been to, funded. I didn't, luckily, I got funding for that. Those are businesses. They're not cures. So my advice would be for parents or somebody that wants to navigate that is not to call. I know I said it before. My advice would be to go to an in-between person. Talk to a doctor. Talk to a social worker. Even talk to somebody. Go try out a meeting and see what people say there. You kind of need that middle person to get in faster and in the right place. Like I said before, it's not like TV where you just show up with a suitcase and you're ready to stop drinking. You need that help. And, you know, there are wonderful people at the Outreach Van and Island Health. Like, the amount of help here, if you find it, is so compassionate, so helpful. It's things I could have never thought of, forms that were really hard to understand when I'm in my sickness. They just hold your hand through it, and it's just the best.
Is there anything else about your story or anything else you think it's important for someone to hear on this issue?
Yeah, that we're working hard, okay? I've made a lot of bad choices that have fueled this disease. But I'd like to reiterate that people with addictions are not bad people. They have a bad thing and they make some bad choices. And it's a tough thing to navigate, but the people that are in recovery work hard every day to maintain a good life and go above and beyond that to be of service and to help people and just be that extra human being, kindness, all the good things we strive for, kindness, compassion, service, thinking outside yourself. That's where you want to get with this thing. So the disease is not waiting on your shoulder, waiting to get you. You're just an awesome person, and you're like, screw off, alcohol. You know, that's what we strive for. So we're all working hard. I'd like people to know.
Jordan Kotchuk, thank you very much for taking the time to speak about it with me.
Thank you. Great questions. It was great to talk to you, Joe.
Jordan Kotchuk speaking about his experiences with alcohol use disorder. He'll be part of a panel discussion at Rethinking Drinking, an event hosted by the Nanaimo Foundation at Vancouver Island University's Malaspina Theatre. It's on Wednesday, March 25th. Doors open at 2:30, and the event is free for the public to attend. After the interview, Kotchuk mentioned that in Nanaimo, a team called Substance Use Services Outreach, or SUSO, have been a particularly helpful resource for him and others he's known. Their phone number is 250-713-5118. That's 250-713-5118.
People First Radio, People First Media, and People First Stories are community media projects of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society and are produced in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed do not necessarily represent the views of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society or its broadcast, podcast, and social media partners.